and welcome to Education in Focus podcast from Adoption Focus, a space to delve into all things school and education related. My name is Lee and I'm the training manager at Adoption Focus. The education of our children is a real passion of mine, and so it's a privilege for me to be joined by two of our education experts here at Adoption Focus, Jason Gilman-Hughes and Lisa Biggs. Jason is our wonderful education advisor, and your background is primary education, isn't it, Jason?
Yes, it is indeed. Many years, I think about 25 or so, spent in schools as a teacher, Senko, deputy head teacher in different schools and settings. And over that time, always been interested in children with additional needs, and particularly those who've been in care or formerly looked after. And over the more recent sort of past, the last 4.5 years or so, I'm actually a foster parent as well. So having looked after many children over that time, seeing the sort of challenges they experience, particularly not just at home, but also with regards to schools, I think it's interesting to see how it feels from the other side. So hopefully having a foot in both camps is quite an interesting perspective nowadays.
Thanks, Jason. Our second expert is Lisa Biggs. Lisa is part of the training team at Adoption Focus, supporting our adopters to navigate their adoption journey. Your experience is as a secondary school teacher, isn't it, Lisa?
It is, yep. So I worked in secondary schools for 13 years, and although I didn't do much on the pastoral side, I've been a maths teacher, a second department, and a head of department as well. And I was a form tutor as well, so I did do a bit of pastoral. But I'm also an adoptive mum as well, so I'm now getting the chance to see school from a completely different perspective, and it's been an eye-opener so far.
Thanks, Lisa. So, just for you listeners, within Education in Focus, we will explore a range of topics, and we would really welcome your suggestions, questions and contributions. So please feel free to drop us an email at education@adoption-focus.org.uk. Some topics we explore will be specific to adoption and the needs of our children, whilst others will be more general. We will never profess to be the experts on every school and every child, but we'll endeavour to offer different perspectives and give you the tools and knowledge to support your child's education. We would love to hear your experiences too. So if you fancy joining us on the podcast, you're more than welcome. Just drop us an email. As a parent of an adopted child, are there particular triggers within school that I should be aware of, Jason?
Yeah, there could be lots, really, unfortunately. It depends on your child, of course, but there are so many things that happen in schools that, on the face of it, sound really good fun, and probably are for a lot of children, but some of these things are not such fun for our children, depending on what they've experienced in their, you know, their early childhood. I can think of many examples. I mean, one that strikes me is a personal example. One of our boys, although we weren't really aware of it at the time, it was Halloween was a huge thing. We had a notion that might be something of an issue. I always tended to keep Halloween low-key anyway. I don't particularly like it or some of the things that it can trigger in children anyway, but it inevitably just creeps up. It's there, it's everywhere. And although schools don't particularly celebrate Halloween, or it's going to be something that children talk about, and there'll be pumpkins and things around. So it took us slightly by surprise in the extent of the trigger for him, but we learned a lot from that. And I'm guessing a lot of parents will know or will probably discover triggers that they didn't expect. Sometimes we don't know what the children have been through. But there are things like Mother's Day, Father's Day, Christmas, Easter. Then you've got all the charity events like Children in Need and Comic Relief. Now, whilst they might not themselves be a triggering event, just sometimes having to dress up or do things that are different, and when the school feels different and everyone's not doing their normal routine, that can throw a lot of our children. It can make them feel very out of sorts and anxious. As we know, a lot of our children struggle anyway, and they really thrive on those routines and structure and that predictability. And suddenly you're faced with people not dressing in the same clothes. And again, some children have sensory needs, and so actually dressing in other clothes isn't something they like, they enjoy, and they might want to be in the uniform, and therefore they don't, but at the same time they don't want to feel like they're sticking out from the others. So it can be quite a difficult thing to navigate. So I think the classic or the critical thing to do is really make sure your communication with the school is good. And if you are aware of things that might trigger your child, I think you've got to get in there first and be proactive. I think because often the things go wrong when schools aren't aware, or they're a bit clumsy perhaps and hadn't, although they kind of knew there were things that your child might be sensitive to. There's so much going on that they forgot something simple, and as a result it's made things difficult. Your child then become distressed and it's dysregulated, and it could just make things a bit awkward. But there are lots of positives. I mean, at the same time, I can think of many examples where for us the school did a great job. We did say there were certain things we knew that might be difficult, and we always had conversations around Father's Day and Mother's Day and how should we handle that. And I was very pleased the school actually took the time to ring us sometimes and ask questions and say, I've got this thing coming up. And for example, Christmas last year, the Christmas show, one of our children had never seen a Christmas show, never experienced one and didn't know what to expect. So rather than throwing him in at the deep end and making it really unmanageable, they asked us what we thought might be manageable for him, because even a busy classroom for him was difficult. So a stage and music and dancing and blah, 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 and costumes, all it just would have been overwhelming. And actually we came up with a plan that we felt would work, and it meant that he could still enjoy some of it and still be part of things but not overwhelmed. And I think the school were relieved that we weren't saying, well, we want him to be on stage and we want to come and sit at the audience and wipe away a tear as our little angel's sort of being a shepherd or something, because you might have dream of that. It might be one of those moments that parents really crave. Yeah. But sometimes it's not realistic. It's not for us, it's for them. And we've got to remember, who is it for? Because that's what we came to the conclusion that, well, this Christmas event is for him, not for me. And whilst I love Christmas events, I've seen hundreds of them, thankfully, in school anyway. I've seen many, many productions. So I'm lucky in a sense, I suppose I don't need to. But we found a way that we could celebrate with, and enabled him to celebrate and be part of it without it becoming something that was a massive trigger. So as I say, there are lots of things that could trigger your child. So, and schools can get it right, but I think you've got to be proactive. That's what I would say.
I found it really interesting thinking about trigger points in an academic year from a secondary perspective, because in some ways managing trigger points in a secondary school is easier, because we don't make big things of things like Mother's Day or Father's Day, Halloween or Easter. And involvement in things like plays and concerts is often voluntary. So children tend to put themselves forward for these things through their drama teacher or through an extracurricular club. So in that respect, triggers don't arise in the same way. However, if children are finding those points triggering, then they do bring it into school. And I think when I was reflecting on it, I was quite disappointed in myself that I couldn't think of examples of times when I dealt with triggers well, or I dealt with them at all. And so I was thinking through the options of why that might be. Was it that I have never taught a child that was triggered by anything? But, you know, as well as being a maths teacher, I have also taught psychology, I've also taught PSHE, and that does cover some sensitive topics. And I also held form room discussions as well. So I don't think that's the case. Was it that I accidentally managed to navigate these sensitive subjects well? Maybe, hopefully. Or was it the option that actually I wasn't aware of the triggers, and I never found out if I did it well or not? And to be honest, that does leave you feeling a little bit uncomfortable, that in those 13 years of teaching, I may have inadvertently not supported a child through a triggering situation. I didn't check in with them afterwards to find out if that young person was okay. And I think it's just, I think trigger points within the year are less widely known and discussed in secondary schools than they are in primary schools. So we do kind of appreciate that there is flashpoints, or there are flashpoints in the year. So on the Christmas run-up, you might find that behaviour is deteriorating. That's generally seen as like a whole school thing rather than individual children. So we do try and keep routine until the very end, keep things structured, try and keep the school looking and feeling the same. But it's seen more from a behavioural management point of view for a whole school rather than actually a well thought out plan of supporting young people through triggering times. So yeah, I'm not sure that's the answer that people would want to hear, but it's definitely my reality from being within quite a few secondary schools and looking at those trigger points throughout the year.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? How different that secondary schools actually seem to be more routine, perhaps, overall. Whereas yeah. I'm trying to think of other things that happen. I mean, another thing that can be an issue is particular anniversaries may trigger things for some children that might be not at any specific date that other people might notice. Birthdays can be difficult sometimes because it depends on what a child associates with birthdays for them. They might actually find it wonderful, but the excitement itself is difficult for them to regulate. So it might express itself in a different way that maybe means it's difficult for them to manage that they're around that time in school. And I think, again, it's a case of just making the school aware that this is might be what's happening and what might be going on and be sort of prepared for it so that we can hopefully avoid problems arising, because that's generally the situation. As I said before, I think most of the things where they go wrong, it's just inadvertent. Usually it's kind of, oops, it's like forgetting, missing something. Very rarely is it something that people just totally disregard and say, well, never mind, just get on with it. I'd hope not, but that would be an issue definitely if that was happening. I was just only thinking about other things that happen in primary schools. You often get visitors to the school. I don't know if that's the same in secondary, where you get you might get a visit from the fire engine. It's exciting, it's brilliant, but I don't know, for some children that might actually bring back a horrendous memory or something. The police, again, I can think of that not being an easy one for some. But if the children are prepared and know it's going to happen, and we can explain that we know that well, we've got a police officer coming into school, but they're going to talk about this, that, and the other. And if that's something that you know is difficult for your child, then you can acknowledge it with them and explain that you know it might be stressful, but here are some options. You know, if it's too much, you don't have to be there. You don't have to take part. You can do something else. And hopefully that's something you can agree with the school. Which I said before about getting in there and saying, actually, can we just talk about what might work here? And hopefully they'll ask.
Lisa, are there any triggers within the curriculum for adopted children specifically?
You see, now this one I find easier to reflect upon because we are quite curriculum heavy in secondary schools. There's a lot of curriculum thrown around with all the subjects that they study. And it can be quite difficult to identify them because your child is going to have a lot of teachers and there will be, like I say, lots of different things that they study. It might be that biology covers genes and hereditary traits. PSHE might cover domestic abuse or substance misuse. History quite often talk about family trees. Psychology can talk about mental health concerns or attachment issues. English literature might have a book with an adoption theme in it running through. Even in maths, we work so hard to shoehorn in real life context that you'd be amazed with what they come up with. So that one's quite an unpredictable one. I can remember myself having to write a poem about my mum in English language class when I was at school. And I really hope that it would be dealt with more sensitively than it was when I was at school. But these things are quite often, they're part of the curricula, they're tasks that need to be completed. And I couldn't agree with Jason more when it's all about communication and making sure we get the message out there so that teachers can pick up those possible curriculum triggers in time.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully, just that, as you were talking about that, it made me think about topic webs and things. Often schools will send out, the primary school often send out some kind of information at the start of the term saying, oh, this is what our topic is this term. We're going to be learning about X, Y, and Z. So if you can see there's something in that theme that you feel may be, you know, potentially presenting a problem or an issue for your child, then that's the point at which to say, hello, school, could I just let you know that this is this thing you're doing. Can we just have a chat about it? Because it might cause a problem. And they might not want to, you know, you might not want to deal with the consequences in school. So let's try and avoid that. So, yeah, baby photos and things like that. Sometimes you get these letters, can you bring a baby photo in? I remember that was something we had to do and thought, oh, that's where the school did forget something. Yeah. And we said, well, don't have any, actually. And you don't want the child suddenly feel like they're, again, different.
They're the only one.
Can't be the same as the others. And how do you deal with that? So it is secret. It is communication, I think. But, you know, if the school is organising events and you just feel it's not appropriate and you feel that they're putting a bit of pressure on, which hopefully they wouldn't, but there's absolutely nothing wrong with, of course, say politely declining and saying, no, I don't think that's going to work for my child. So, no, I don't want to take part in X or Y because I don't think it'll work for them. Even though it might seem like fun on the surface, some things won't be for the old children.
So, Jason, if communication is key, which I completely agree, it absolutely is, how much detail should we go into about our child's history and potential triggers with school?
That's as much as you feel comfortable in disclosing, I think. But you'd have to hope, well, you really should expect actually them to be respectful of this, of anything that's confidential. And so you might need to have a conversation in a room away from other people that aren't listening. But to there might be some things that are relevant that you need them to know. You don't have to go to specifics, but you might have to say they experienced, or for example, I have to go back to Halloween just because I can, because it's familiar. Halloween, I know that they were exposed to, for example, unpleasant videos that were far above their age limit, that left them emotionally scarred because they're constantly having flashbacks. Or, you know, they were told there were monsters hiding in here or whatever and actually made to believe it. So and the school might not be able to do much about things like Halloween because it isn't something they necessarily teach or involved in, but it's just being able to manage it and saying, well, how can we help the child through this rocky period? And acknowledging it, and then sometimes and just giving that information to the school might just be what they need to help them understand where the child's coming from. So when the behaviors begin to express themselves, the school, the staff can think, ah, I know what this is coming from. And then maybe can use the right form of words to reassure the child, say, I know that, let's say Halloween, we know that Halloween can be a bit tricky for you. It might make you big wobbly feelings inside. So let's go and do something that makes you, let's go and do this instead. And let's do something so you can distract them. And by acknowledging it for them, that can be very powerful anyway, can't it? But if the staff aren't aware, they can't necessarily say that. They just say, oh dear, this looks a bit tricky. Or come on, what are you doing? Stop being silly, which of course is not what's happening. And then that's when they start inadvertently saying the wrong things because they don't realize why the child's behaving in that particular way.
I think it's interesting listening to you talk about communication with a primary school, because obviously in a primary school, you have one class teacher. So there is that opportunity to have a conversation and to kind of like pass that information on in person to be heard and to be able to convey what the triggers might be and how it might present. In a secondary school, logistically, it's slightly more difficult because there are a lot more teachers involved. So actually having one-to-one meetings with them all is going to be very challenging. And also just by the nature of the way the secondary schools are set up, teachers know their children a little bit less well. So a primary school teacher will spend 5 days a week with their class. They get to know them quite well very quickly, whereas a secondary school teacher might have five classes of 30 students that they see only a few times a week. So it's, the depth of knowledge is different. And therefore I do really think that the onus is very much on parents to get the information to the relevant members of staff and to be able to do it more than once. So definitely at the start of each academic year when teachers change, but if there is a change of teacher in the middle of the year, then we might need to do it again. If I talk about the logistics of how you can do that before I talk about what kind of things you might want to say. I've known parents in the past kind of just send an email. So at the start of the year, you get the emails of all the relevant teachers and you can kind of just pop an email out to everyone. But I've also known parents who create like an A4 sheet with like a pen portrait of their child. And then that's a handy thing because you can keep it as a parent, update it each year with new information, and send it out again. So some parents write the pen portrait for the point of view of the child. So So they might include information such as, I like routine and structure, and I find the end of term difficult when routines change. I learn best when I have written instructions as well as verbal instructions. I am adopted and may find topics involving discussions about family difficult. We write letters to my birth family in November and May, so these times of years might be hard. Domestic violence and substance misuse might be triggering for me. I have a good relationship with so-and-so in the art department and may need reminding to go and see her if I'm struggling. And if you have any concerns about the topics that are in the curriculum for this year, please email my mum beforehand. And then what the teacher has then got is kind of an idea of A, how they can support the child, but also times of the year or content within the curriculum that might be triggering. I am aware that you might be wary about sharing that kind of information on a piece of paper or on an email, and obviously how much you divulge about your child's triggers is entirely up to you, what you are comfortable with. You might not feel that line about domestic violence and substance misuse is triggering for me needs to go to all teachers. Perhaps that might just be the form tutor and the PSHE tutor, for example, or maybe just the form tutor and then ask their advice on who else would need to know that in terms of curriculum content. But definitely doing something like that pen portrait and getting it out to the teachers quite quickly at the start of every academic year means that they have something to refer back to and something that they can kind of really anticipate potential trigger times, and also including things like finding structure and routine comforting will give them strategies that they can use. The other thing that might be useful to include is how your child presents when they are triggered or when they are struggling. So I just know from my daughter's experience that if she's struggling with something, she actually regresses and she becomes a lot younger than her years, and she starts to play the fool a little bit. And to anyone who doesn't know her, they might not recognise that for what it is. They might just think she's playing the fool. She's acting the clown. She's trying to get some attention. She's maybe being a bit disruptive. But I know that's what she does when she's struggling to cope, or she's struggling with some information, or she's struggling with something that's happening around her. And so that might also be kinds of things that you want to include. How does your child present when they're finding things difficult?
Yeah, that's a good point though, isn't it? It can be easily mistaken for something else, which is why teachers might say, oh, come on, don't be so silly. And those little phrases can be completely inappropriate and actually cause all kinds of problems. So it's best to try and help them and hope that school's receptive enough to listen to these bits of information. Well, yeah, it must be difficult in the secondary for that information to get shared around everybody.
It is treading that fine line between making sure people are informed enough to be supportive, but actually not wanting to share information too widely and kind of lose privacy. What I would say is information sharing within schools is variable. So in some cases, the individual class teachers at secondary school, the only thing that they might know is that your child is entitled to pupil premium. And that could be the pupil premium due to economic disadvantage. It could be because they are looked after. It could be because they were previously looked after, or it could be because they're the children of service personnel. But actually, they don't necessarily know, unless you say, which one of those it is. Obviously, there are some members of the staff in the school that will know. So, you know, the designated teacher will know, anyone who's in control of the administration and kind of like processes that side of things will know. But individual teachers sometimes don't get the information because schools do work quite hard to protect a child's right to privacy, and they tend to divulge information on a need to know basis. But that system in itself is slightly flawed, because if the person who's responsible for divulging information doesn't understand the need to know, then they might not ever convey something to the people that need it. Unfortunately, issues surrounding adoption aren't widely understood in all schools, and it may be that someone thinks themselves, well, they were adopted when they were 2, they're 14 now, there's clearly going to be no problem, nobody needs to know anything about that. And we know that the reality doesn't match up to that, but if that's the impression of the person with the information, they might not be putting that information out there. So the onus has to be in secondary schools, the onus has to be on us as parents to make sure we are getting some information to the relevant people. But yeah, treading that line between how much to share and with who can be difficult. So it may be that you have to send out a couple of emails to different people with varying amounts of information on there.
Yeah. And well, I suppose one thing is that that does give you a bit of a trail of accountability. If things are going wrong, then you can say, well, look, it's here in writing. I sent this information in.
Yeah.
And somebody is, if you've got an example where someone's just disregarded that information, then, or claims not to have had it, then you've got some way of saying, well, actually, no, yeah, that's not,
and actually,
true.
I've just been thinking about it. I've been saying to email quite a lot, and that's just thinking the logistics of getting the information to a lot of people. But actually, if you're really not comfortable with that, then the form tutor is probably a good person to speak to in person and get the information, and then ask them who needs to know what, who do I share this with, and how do we get that information to them. So if you are adverse to actually putting it all down and sending it out into the big wide world, then a conversation with a form tutor would also be a good way to start this process.
Aren't there quite often sort of pastoral teams as well in secondary school? So there may be people there who perhaps have quite an important role in those children's lives.
Yeah. And also, if your children have additional needs, then we also need to think about informing the SENCO team as well, don't we? That's another team that often play a large role in our child's school life, and it'd be important they have the information about these potential triggers as well.
I think we've touched on a lot of this kind of throughout our chat, but I just wondered, as a parent, is there anything that I should definitely be doing if my child is struggling with being triggered a lot in school?
That's a really good question. Unfortunately, some of our children do suffer a lot of triggers. They may be certain times of year, they may be curriculum based, it may be a whole host of things. And sometimes we have to acknowledge that we might not actually know what is triggering them. We can see the effects of it, but we can't see it. And it just comes back, I think, to that kind of that trying to pin it down and trying to communicate with it, but also communicate to the school, but also be willing to hear their side of it as well, because they may spot things that are triggering them in school. They may spot things that perhaps you're not seeing, or perhaps they're not clearly able to communicate to you when you're at home. So going back to that communication is absolutely key. Jason also touched upon a point earlier, and it's about not being afraid to say no. If you are identifying things that are not working for your child in school that they are finding continually triggering, then we are able to, as parents, say no. They won't take part in the class assembly. They are not going to be doing the lessons on domestic violence in PSHE. They are not going to take part in the Christmas play. And yes, okay, we can handle those conversations sensitively and find ways that our children don't feel left out, don't feel excluded, don't feel isolated, don't feel different. But we need to advocate for them. And, you know, communication is key, but we are able to say no to people, to schools when something is continually triggering our child.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. As I said, like we said before, it's we've got to try and remember who these things are for, and when they put these events, if it's events we're talking about, then if the events are for parents to enjoy, that's fine. But if it's at the expense of a child's well-being and stress levels, it's probably not worth it.
So whilst every child is unique and their story individual, we really hope that you found something useful from this episode. Be sure to look out for future episodes on Adopt-A-Verse, such as transitions, you heard it here first, education, health and care plans, and parents' evening. Don't forget, you can contact us at any time with your suggestions, contributions or questions at education@adoption-focus.org.uk. Thanks for listening.